GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, the Conservative MP for Yorkton Melville is calling on the federal government to scrap its proposal for a 30% reduction in fertilizer emissions by 2030. We'll hear from Kathy Wagenthal on today's program. Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities President Ray Orb describes 2022 as a volatile year for farming. We'll hear from him on today's program as well. And for the next couple of days, I'll be airing portions of a producer panel on precision agriculture. The panel was held December 7th during the Canola Discovery Forum in Saskatoon. So all of those stories and much more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Milligan Bio. Milligan Bio now offers bio-meal for your livestock, giving your animals more protein, more energy, and more of what they need. It's also brought to you by Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, we've received a little bit of snow over the last 24 hours or so. Can we expect it to start petering out soon?
Yeah, there isn't much accumulation left for the Yorkton area and points south and west. There is still some snow to the north. The snowfall warning still up for areas north. A little batch of steadier, heavier snowfall pushing toward Humboldt this afternoon. That will work its way toward Wynyard and then across toward Swan River as the day goes on. That's where the warnings are in effect. I suspect the warnings are for this last clump of snow. And it is just, it's heavy on the front end, and then it eases back up to lighter snow. Still accumulating snow through the afternoon for those areas, but that is not likely to make it into the Yorkton area. It should stay south. We'll get grazed by some of the flurries. We may even see the flurries pick up for a little while. But again, it's not going to amount to too much more accumulating snow. We could pick up a centimeter or two for the Yorkton area tonight. But those areas north getting into still higher totals, 4 or 5 centimeters for the afternoon. The wind is not a huge factor either, which is good. The temperatures are not in the Arctic range, which is good. Nice combination of it just not being brutal for these next couple of days. -9 this afternoon. The wind chill -20. That's, I would say, an average wind chill for this time of year with the wind in the 10 to 20 range. It's still in the east right now. Once this last disturbance goes by, it'll kick around into the west-northwest, and that's where it'll stay tonight and tomorrow. The accumulating snow tonight, again, briefly picks up for the Yorkton area, a quick 1 to 2 centimeters through the middle part of the night, and then back to flurries into early tomorrow. Those will taper off through the day. The temperature under that west-to-northwest wind, though, and for a while, technically north-northwest details, it's going to keep the temperature from rising much. We'll be around -17 tonight. We'll struggle back to -16, maybe -15 tomorrow afternoon, but not much better than that. And we will clear out tomorrow night. That will allow us to drop to -23. The wind is still in that 10 to 20 range. That's not overly strong, but at -23, it's enough to get the wind chill back down to -30. Quiet weather for the end of the week. Friday is a partly sunny day with a high near -12. That's where we should be this time of year. We're pretty close to that for Saturday and Sunday. Both days looking partly sunny. Looks like a quieter stretch of weather on tap once we shake these flurries by early tomorrow.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at -20 degrees, Swan River -17, Dauphin and Brandon -11, Shoal Lake Russell -10, Roblin -14. Regina is at -9 degrees, Saskatoon -17, Hudson Bay -20, Broadview Mooseman, Indian Head -11, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington -15. The Yorkton-Melville region has some light snow, an east wind at 15 kilometers an hour. 87% is the relative humidity. The temperature is -13 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like -20 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of -11 degrees and dropped to a low of -14 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is -12. The normal low is minus 23. The sun rose in Yorkton at 8:54 this morning, and it will set at 4:49 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Melitta at minus 4 degrees. The cold spot was Tadoule Lake at minus 34 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Maple Creek at plus 7 degrees. The cold spot was Collins Bay at minus 25 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. We'll have more coming up on the program. But first, it's time to check in once again with Tanya Cherry. Thank you, Tanya. The Conservative MP for Yorkton Melville is calling on the federal government to scrap its proposal for a 30% reduction in fertilizer emissions by 2030. Kathy Wagenthal says it's very unfair to Canadian farmers.
Seriously, our farmers are very concerned because what they're suggesting is voluntary at this point. They don't have confidence that that will be the case moving forward. So it is a huge ask, and it's a very broad ask in relationship to how you really determine how much fertilizer needs to be used to produce what we need to grow. So it is a deep concern to them. As you know, inflation is already a huge issue, along with the carbon tax. So this is just another blow to our farmers. They've had a good year, which is good to see. But of course, they're at the bottom of the totem pole, so to speak. So there's nowhere else to go to cover these costs.
She expects the fertilizer emission issue to loom large over Ottawa's agricultural sustainability consultations, which will be taking place until the end of March.
Well, as you know as well, the late Doug Carr, brought forward a PMB on greening the prairies. And certainly we have a lot of concern about anything the federal government is doing in relation to the environment and how we take care of that environment, especially here on the prairies, because that's what's important to us. You know, our greenhouse gas emissions in Canada that are due to agriculture are 8% of Canada's total GHG emissions, which is less than 2% of the global dynamic. So in contrast, as I mentioned, global average of emissions for agriculture is 26%. So we in Canada are incredibly efficient and very concerned about our environment. If we're not taking care of it, we're not growing food for the world. So there's a lot of concern around the direction that this government is going in regard to setting these mandates and arbitrary numbers and expectations on our farmers.
Wagenthal says farmers should contact their member of parliament to voice their concerns.
That's right. Anything that we do in the House just carries so much more weight, obviously, as Canadians respond to what the government is doing. We have always seen that be very effective. I don't have confidence that they're going to make a lot of changes, but we have seen some rollback, as an example, on their limiting even further the use of firearms for our hunters and our farmers. So this too is something that Canadians can make a difference on right across the country. So writing your members of parliament, writing the agriculture minister, signing the petition that our shadow minister John Barlow has brought forward, and it's available online, and you can go to e-petition4133. That will take you right to it, and it's brought forward by a PEI farmer. And you know, a lot of times out here we don't realize how national these problems are. And I say to folks, you know, we really don't have a problem east and west in regard to agriculture, because anything that we're facing here in regard to supply chains, carbon tax, these fertilizer limitations, transport, it impacts every type of farm across the country. So I thought it was interesting that the PEI farmer called on the Liberal government to abandon their aggressive emissions target and protect our farming industry from the threat of the implementation of a mandatory fertilizer reduction. So this is going right to the point of saying we are against this becoming a mandatory requirement. And it's important that not just people who are involved directly in agriculture sign it, but also Canadians from whatever walk of life, because this is impacting inflation. It's impacting the cost of our food, and it's impacting our ability to send food across the world, because it's going to limit how much we can grow. And, you know, we know that our farmers are already the most innovative in the world. It's amazing to see how, you know, it's not just a broad spray of fertilizer and pesticides now. They can target directly where in their fields by mapping where they need the product. And that's the only place they put it. And they only put it there if it's absolutely necessary to make sure that the crop grows well. So, you know, we're so conscientious already. We certainly don't need the government, federal government, putting mandates on us that we have seen other places in the world end up basically decimating their agriculture industry.
She adds these final comments.
You know what? I would suggest to folks that listen to go to fertilizercanada.ca. And especially if you're educators, there are wonderful tools there that talk about what we have in the 4R Nutrient Stewardship Program. And this is a copyrighted program. We out here use the right 4Rs, is the right source, at the right rate, at the right time, and the right place. So it's modern innovation that's very targeted, and like I said, is very effective in making sure, too, that farmers use what they need. But of course, they don't want to spend more than they have to, and they don't want to use more than they have to, because they do care about the environment. So I would just encourage educators or parents, young people, to take a look at that, maybe especially those that aren't involved directly in agriculture, to get a better sense of how efficient and how proud they can be of our farmers here in the riding of Yorkton-Melville.
Kathy Wagenthal is the Conservative MP for Yorkton-Melville. It's time now for the Ag Review portion of our program, and that's a presentation of New Era Ag Technologies in Swan River.
GX94, Ag Review.
RCMP say a Canadian Pacific train has derailed near Taber, Alberta. Mounties say that 11 rail cars derailed in various locations along Highway 3 between Highway 26 to Range Road 163 and 162 today. Canadian Pacific Railway police are still on the scene with highway control services, and traffic on Highway 3 has been directed to one lane east and west while cleanup continues. RCMP say there have been no reported injuries and that no dangerous goods have spilled. It was 1 year ago this month that Canada disclosed the finding of an atypical case of BSE. While the finding didn't impact most markets, it did create trade frustrations with China that are still not rectified. Unlike classical BSE cases, atypical BSE appears spontaneously in older cattle, even in countries where no classical BSE has ever been reported. Canada immediately reported the case, which was detected as part of the country's BSE surveillance program, to the World Organization for Animal Health on December 17th of 2021. While the Philippines and South Korea have resumed the imports of Canadian beef, China's market has still not returned to normal. Even without the Chinese market, Canadian exporters performed well in other Asian countries, such as Japan. The Canadian Grain Commission, or CGC, is giving farmers more time to participate in the Harvest Sample Program. A notice on the CGC's website indicates farmers have until December 30th to send in samples for the 2022 program, and farmers who signed up by December 12th will receive envelopes in time to submit samples this year. The CGC started the free voluntary survey in 1927 to test wheat samples. 20 years later, canola was added to the list of crops. Today, farmers can send in samples of soybeans, lentils, chickpeas, oats, and other crops, and receive multiple pieces of information, including unofficial grades, dockage assessments on canola and mustard, falling number for wheat and rye, and vomitoxin levels of wheat, corn, and barley.
farmers can use this information when marketing and delivering grain. And the CGC uses the data to put together annual crop quality reports. CN and CP Rail supplied a combined 85% of hopper cars ordered in Grain Week 20, an improvement from the previous week's 78%, reflecting improved performance for each of CN and CP. In supplying 84% of hopper cars ordered on time in Week 20, CN's order fulfillment performance improved from the prior week, but once again fell short of the 90% threshold. CN has fallen short of the 90% performance threshold in 7 of the last 8 weeks and 11 times in the last 14 weeks. CP order fulfillment performance improved week over week, with the railway supplying 86% of cars ordered as compared to 76% the prior week. This marks the 15th consecutive week that CP has fallen short of the 90% performance threshold, while returning above the 80% threshold for the second time in the last 3 weeks. And that's the Ag Review portion of our program. It's time to head back out once again now to Tanya Cherry. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. We have light snow and minus 13 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at 1 o'clock. Saskatchewan Association of Rural Municipalities President Ray Orb describes 2022 as a volatile year for farming. Orb says crop conditions were wide-ranging across the grain belt, with western areas dry and some eastern areas quite wet.
We had quite a volatile year, I think, you know, as far as crop production around the province. We had some really dry areas, still looking really dry, especially, you know, in the southwest right now, the west side of the province as well. We had some crops out there that weren't very good at all. And, you know, the rest of the province, including, you know, the east side, northeast side, some really good crops and really good grain prices, you know, across the province, which I think helped lift up agriculture a bit. On the livestock side, not as promising. You know, we're hearing, you know, a lot of negative feedback from people that are raising cattle in particular, not getting the prices that they need to, you know, to be able to continue into the future. So we're wanting to meet with the Stockowers Association and the SCA in the new year to be able to discuss going forward what's the future for livestock production in this province. So kind of a mixed bag, a lot of weather dependent crops that really, you know, got rain just in time in my own area, you know, in the Cooper area. We were lucky, we had some timely rains and the fellows pulled off some pretty good crops, with the exception of some of the pulses that had too much rain. So looking forward into the new year, well, you know what, we're looking at federal agriculture policies, some of the policies that I think are going to shape our future, not only in agriculture, but all kinds of things. You know, Bill C-21, you know, the amendments that were put forward, we're really concerned about those amendments, and we've voiced our concerns about that. You know, some of the resource development as well, we're seeing our province bring forward legislation, Ask First legislation that we're going to weigh in on as well. And all these things together, Saskatchewan has a bright future, but we have to make sure that we plan ahead for the future. And that includes working with the federal government wherever and if that is possible.
Nonetheless, he's looking forward to 2023.
I'm saying cautiously optimistic because if we have the producers out there that can grow the crop, there's no doubt about that. But we don't need federal policies that actually hold them back. Things like, you know, the carbon tax, looking at grain transportation. We see still some failures in grain transportation, and the federal government, I think, needs to step up to the plate. One thing that we are asking the federal government is to look at rail service becoming an essential service so that farmers, after they grow a good crop, can actually move that grain and get it into export position.
Orb says rising interest rates and farm costs will also be issues in 2023.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, the grain prices are pretty promising, but unfortunately with it comes higher cost of production, fertilizer prices, all of the other things that regulatory issues that affect the crop inputs are really a big concern, and at some point, you know, if the prices start coming down, the commodity, the expenses don't always come down accordingly, and that's a concern. We weighed in on the gun control thing, you know, and the regulations that are all associated with this, the SASC first thing, once they get that into place, it's really not a good place to be when you're kind of in between the federal government and the province. And I totally understand why the province is doing that, but the Fed just don't seem to get the message that they need to back off on some of them.
Ray Orb is the president of SARM. It's time now for the livestock market conditions, and they're a presentation of the Yorkton Crossing Retirement Village.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for February are trading at 157.85. That's down 2. April live cattle trading at 161.80, also down 2. January feeder cattle trading at 183.42, that's up 32. March feeder cattle trading at 186.22, up 82. February lean hogs trading at 91.30, that's down 17. April lean hogs trading at 96.70, up 25. And that's the livestock market conditions. For the next couple of days, I'll be airing portions of a producer panel on precision agriculture. The panel was held December 7th during the Canola Discovery Forum in Saskatoon. There were three farmers on the panel. Carl DeConnick-Smith farms 10,000 acres with his wife and parents in the Darcy area, just west of Rosetown. Rob Stone farms in the Davidson area and is a director with Sask Wheat. And Shayla Worms farms with her husband Nick on land in the St. Walburg, Maqua, and Turtleford areas in northwestern Saskatchewan. The panel was moderated by Jay Wetter with the Canola Council of Canada. Prior to the discussion, farmers in attendance were asked to respond to this question in an electronic poll. The question was, what precision agriculture practice provides the quickest return on investment? The top answer was variable rate fertilizer, followed closely by sectional control, and then optical spraying. The first response is from Carl DeConnick-Smith, followed by Shayla Worms, and then Rob Stone.
That's always top of mind. Fertilizer is expensive. I want to be a little biased here. Optical spraying, I think, should be a little higher on our farm. With investments that we've made, right now it's about a 50%. So it's a two-year payback. When we first bought it 5 years ago, lower chemical costs, it was about a three-year payback. But that's moved up now to about 2. So it's significant on a large farm. And sectional control, definitely. Like, most people are using some form of that now.
Can you give me a ballpark price on how much optical the kit costs?
Yeah. Ours is Weed It, which is an add-on, can be added on to almost all manufacturers. 120 feet, $290,000, that is the boom plus kit. So they're selling it as a package now, not just an add-on to your existing boom. It's a whole kit. And I think the John Deere See & Sprays, if you're going to order a new John Deere sprayer, I believe the add-on for that is roughly in that $100,000 to probably $130,000. So if you're ordering a new sprayer, based on what I know about spot spraying, it would seem like a no-brainer.
Shayla, what's your reaction?
I would say that what we talk a lot about is that sectional control for our farm would be a little bit higher, and I think that just simply comes down to VRT right now. Because we are new into grain production, we're just not finding that the data is useful enough yet. We just don't quite have enough, but I can definitely see the potential in that, and I can understand how many other farms see that ROI. And when it comes to sectional control, I am going to ask that you don't ask me specifics on this because my husband could answer better. But I just know that what jumps out at us is that sectional control is an absolute no-brainer when it comes to our farm setup because we're doing so much turning. And again, like around leases and rocks and hills. So if we didn't have that, I really just don't even want to know what that would look like. So we find that that is extremely beneficial.
What I see with that is that if you had to pick between variable rate fertilizer and sectional control, and you could only pick one, you pick sectional control because that's the quickest, easiest, most inexpensive thing to implement. So don't overthink it. And then start spreading out from there. So because sectional control, the side effect of having that technology, typically you can get the script and put it into your controller. But if you can just have something shutting things off a few seconds earlier, or shutting off half the machine when you've got that last pass on a section, that whole mile, you're covering an extra 5 acres, 4 acres. It adds up quickly. And it adds up quickly in cost, and it adds up quickly too, because that's typically the same areas every time that you overlap with your sprayer, with your drill, with your fertilizer. And you do that time and time and time again. You're building hot spots. You're building spots that aren't, it just keeps duplicating a problem. So to me, section control is the easiest thing to justify. And then all the stuff goes from there because then you've got the tech integrated in your farm. And that's kind of how we started with it, was knew that we wanted sectional control on as much stuff as soon as we could. The first sectional control on our sprayer was $2,000. It was an Outback little thing that you plugged into the switches on a 4700 John Deere in 2006. So it's been around a while, and it's I can't speak highly enough, because I paid it back in the first application.
The next segment was about return on investment. The question is asked by Ian Epp, the agronomy specialist with the Canola Council of Canada. Carl DeConnick-Smith, Shayla Worms, and Rob Stone will respond in that order.
The VR, or the sectional control, or maybe the optical spraying, is there like a minimum farm size or minimum acres that really makes sense to invest in these? I know, Carl, you're talking the two-year return on, you know, on your farm. I'm just curious, if you kind of run through the, you know, if you're a 5,000-acre farm for this, or for the various taxes, is there kind of a minimum farm size or minimum acres you think would make it make sense to do this, or what's the ROI difference?
I'll just talk about just quick spot spray. Most of that tech, I've always made the comment of about 8,000 acres. That gets you to that 2 to 3 year your payback. So then it's just a matter of you looking at your own operation and finding out how many opportunities you have to save, because that's really what spot spraying is about, is it can shift from spring to fall. You might have more opportunities to save in one spring versus another, or one fall. So it's looking at your farm, how many opportunities do you have to go out, use a spot spray technology that will give you a payback? And so 8,000 acres becomes...
So that was 8,000 acres sprayed in a year.
Well, 8,000 acres that you farm. So an 8,000 acre farm, that's what I equate to definitely a 2 year payback on just fall spray and spring burn off.
And I would just make the comment that when it comes to, I think, sectional control, I don't know what that kind of acre count looks like, but ultimately, if you're not having to do the extreme turns, you probably are going to be a slower adopter when it comes to that. But again, just starting small, starting somewhere, and if there are any kind of special maneuvers that you have to make, it probably pays off at even a couple thousand acres. Like, it doesn't have to be a massive amount. So, just kind of taking into consideration like the layout of your fields.
I think it's getting easier all the time to implement these things as add-ons, like Carl talked about. Ravens, you know, implementing a lot of their autonomy focus into the turning and those sorts of things, but they've also got a lot of platform that can go over top of ground drive things, turn them into hydraulic, plug them into the monitor. So really it's a matter of figuring out if you're going to save 5 or 6% with your sectional, and you're going to do X amount of acres, you can math that one out fairly simply. Variable rate fertilizer, that's going to be tougher depending on your goals. But I don't think that it's an onerous amount of acres in order to have that happen. But I think that the spraying one would probably have a better answer for you need this many acres to justify a $300,000 investment. But we're not talking about $300,000 investment with some of these other things. And as you get into some of the robotics and some of these smaller autonomous things, I think that the theory is that it's going to be a lot of units doing the work, so it's scalable, so it can go across a large section of acreages from quite small to quite large. And so I think that that's where there's going to be some benefits for all sizes of people in agriculture.
You've been listening to a producer panel on precision agriculture that was held at the Canola Discovery Forum in Saskatoon, December 7th. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update is coming up in 60 seconds time.
Commodities update.
Canola futures are trading up across the board this hour. March canola trading at $870.20. That's up $5.50. May canola trading at $868.40, up $6.40. March Minneapolis wheat trading at $9.32 per bushel, down 2.25 cents. March Kansas City wheat trading at $882.50. Up 3.25 cents. March Chicago wheat trading at $782.25, up 7.75 cents. March corn trading at $681.50, up 6.75 cents. March soybeans trading at $15.09.50, that's up 20.5 cents. March oats trading at $375.50, up 5 cents. And that's the commodities update. It's time now to check in once again with Tanya Cherry. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. A multi-million dollar grain project has a new partner. The Chief Technology Officer with Regina-based Protein Industries Canada, Megan Gervais, outlines efforts to expand sales of plant-based protein for meat substitutes.
Well, Mama Foods has welcomed two new partners into the consortium project that they're working on with Protein Industries Canada. So two new distribution companies have come into the project, and they're called Tasia Foods and Sierra Meat and Seafood.
She explains what the project is all about.
So the project is really about development of plant-based alternatives for really the global market. And so in November 2021, we announced the project originally, and it's around development of Japanese-style Wagyu beef made from plant-based sources. And so this announcement last week was really about bringing in two new partners who will help with distribution of that product across North America. So one partner will focus on Canada, the other will focus on the United States, and getting the Wagyu beef product that's been developed by Wamame Foods out into restaurants and different types of service industry offerings for North American customers.
Gervais says early marketing looks good.
The group has had some early success for sure. Wamame announced earlier this year that they were working on distribution into Singapore with a couple of hotel chains. And they've also been profiled at some really high-profile events as a featured menu item. And so now it's really about having these partners come in and distribute their products out to different types of retailers and wholesalers to get more broad distribution across North America.
She explains who would want this Japanese-style plant-based beef.
So, you know, I think it was really developed with Asian markets in mind. So some of the traditional places where Wagyu beef would be consumed. But they are looking at food service applications across North America as well. So you're right that it is different than sort of your typical beef product. And so this plant-based alternative is really meant to emulate that same sort of sensory experience with a plant-based source.
Gervais outlines which grains are used to make this plant-based beef.
So the product is being developed. So one of the partners in the project is Merit Functional Foods. And so Merit is a developer of Canada's food-grade non-GMO canola protein, and they also produce a pea protein. So those would be two of the ingredients that would be a focus into this product. And then, you know, other plant-based proteins as well may have a component. I don't know the precise recipe, but those, I know because Merit is a partner in the project, that canola and pea certainly could have a role in the product for sure.
As for the value of this project,
this project here was a $7.6 million total value of the project, and our contribution from Protein Industries Canada was up to $3.8 million into the project.
And Gervais would call this project a success.
This has been a really exciting project to watch because it does have such a fast-to-market sort of focus. And the consortium is really focused on, you know, marketing and getting the product in consumers' hands and focused on distribution. And so they've taken, I would say, a really strategic approach to bringing in partners who can focus on getting their products out to multiple channels all at the same time. So you sort of have a mass acceptance of the product happening really strategically all at once. And so it has been very exciting watching, you know, the ingredients that we're having produced in one of our projects or earlier projects with Merit Functional Foods now being put into a product and seeing the distribution of that product go out to market. So yes, certainly an exciting project and companies that we're really interested in watching grow over the next, you know, year.
Megan Gervais is the Chief Technology Officer with Protein Industries Canada.
Farm Bulletin Board.
The Saskatchewan Pulse Growers 2023 Winter Pulse Meetings will be held February 2nd in Regina, February 9th in Assiniboia, February 16th in Elrose, and March 2nd in Melfort. And of course, the meeting in Regina gives all producers the option to join virtually for that one. So you can register now for the Saskatchewan Pulse Growers 2023 Winter Pulse Meetings. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast. For the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Cloudy with a 50% chance of flurries. Winds west-northwest at 10 to 20 and a high of minus 9. For tonight, cloudy with a 60% chance of flurries with 2 centimeters possible. Winds north-northwest at 15 to 25, a low of minus 17, a wind chill of minus 30. For tomorrow, cloudy with a 40% chance of flurries. Winds west-northwest at 10 to 20, a high of minus 16, a wind chill of minus 26, a low of minus 23 with a wind chill of minus 35. For Friday, partly sunny, winds south-southeast at 15 to 25, and a high of minus 12. For Saturday, partly sunny, a high of minus 13. And for New Year's Day, Sunday, partly sunny, a high of minus 11. In the Paw, it's minus 20 degrees, Swan River minus 17, Dauphin and Brandon minus 11, Show Lake Russell minus 10, Roblin minus 14. Regina is at minus 9, Saskatoon minus 17, Hudson Bay minus 20, Broadview Mooseman, Indian Head minus 11, Wynyard Wadena Kelvington minus 15. The Yorkton-Melville region has some light snow, an east wind at 15 kilometers an hour. 87% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 13 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 20 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again tomorrow at 12:15 for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX Yorkton, a Harvard Media radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.